It is time to bring in the good folks of the Lakeville Journal. Time for This Week in the Lakeville Journal. And it, of course, is available online, tricornernews.com. Also for home delivery and for pickup at locations throughout the tri-state region. We say good morning, good morning, good morning, good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Morning.
It's a colorful, once again, front page for the Lakeville Journal. And we have stories that range from, once again, the reading of the Constitution to the trees to high-speed Internet. And I guess we'll start off, John, we'll go to your story second, but we'll start off with Patrick Sullivan's story about the federal funds that are being considered for high-speed Internet in our rural area.
Yes, the northwest corner towns are organized around the Council of Governments, of course, and they had a meeting recently to figure out how to prepare themselves to take advantage of some federal money. There is, something in the range of $40+ billion that can be accessed for high-speed Internet, and each state is probably likely going to get at least in the vicinity of $100 million. That would mean Connecticut could help the Council of Governments up here in the northwest corner bring Internet and broadband to the towns. Henry Todd, who's the Falls Village first electman, is now going to be the top person at the Council of Governments. They also are looking at other examples of utilities that small towns have put together to be able to create their own internet service. And there's a very colorful example from a town in Vermont, Shutesbury, which it's actually in northern Massachusetts, but it explains how this little town pulled together with really volunteers a viable internet service that saved the town from essentially falling off and becoming an internet desert.
It's interesting to look at these towns and with the money, because as every year goes by, technology improves, and we've reached, I think, the high point for older technology and the cost, and I think every year that goes by, it will get a little less expensive, and the services that are offered for towns and businesses will get better. So this is a big story, and it means a lot to people like us out here who live in the rural area. Color picture on the page is, once again, Lou Bucherri, Independence Day. It's nice to have him back along with the Salisbury Band at the Town Grove and their Independence Day celebration.
Yes, that was a lovely day, and a great photograph of Lou reading the Declaration of Independence and at the Grove. Our print cycle sort of made us dodge around the July 4th. We did get a fireworks photo, and we got this photo. But it was, it was a lot of fun. And the Salisbury Band is terrific.
Yeah.
They played recently also in Norfolk.
Yeah, it's just a great setting at the Town Grove for the band, for the reading of the Constitution. People bring their own picnics, and the extras program sells hot dogs and soda to raise funds. It really is one of those picture-perfect things, especially when the weather is nice. You've got a great story that you did, John, on the draft tree policy that has been issued by the Department of Environmental Protection. And basically, all this came about because of the cutting of those trees along the Housatonic River.
That's right. I'm not sure that it's widely understood that the effort that is now underway at DEEP to specify exactly how it's going to handle hazardous trees is really coming out of the northwest corner, and it applies statewide. There's a story right below this on Craig Miner, who's retired, but he and Maria Horn were galvanized into action in Hartford by a group of citizens in Sharon who were really on top of it when the state kind of cut a little too many trees. So what's happening now is there's a bill, now a law, requiring DEEP to really consult with a licensed arborist before they go into removing hazardous trees, give advance notice, and also give consideration to what really would be considered replanting to create the aesthetic and ecological value that is gone. There's also a piece in here that's very important, which is about heritage trees. These are trees that are, you know, really most significant in terms of their aesthetic or ecological value. And so there's a policy initiative here to specify how they're going to identify those trees. So this is really kudos to the Housatonic Meadows Preservation Action, which is a citizens group down there, mostly in Sharon and Cornwall, who got this whole thing rolling.
Yeah, it's one of those signs that you can start something at the grassroots level and be successful. You can fight City Hall. The old adage is wrong. You can fight City Hall. And the story you do have about Senator Minor retiring, he's been in there quite a long time, and he'll be missed.
Yes. Currently, State Representative Stephen Harding is going to run for Minor's state Senate seat, and he thanked Minor for all of his guidance on the Environment Committee. This was a gathering down in Kent of the GOP, bidding farewell to Minor and just having a little conversation about what they want to do. George Logan, who's running for Congress in the 5th District, took a shot at Johanna Hayes for her voting record. So we will be keeping our eye on both Republicans and Democrats as they get themselves lined up for the coming elections.
All right. We just talked about funds for internet from the government, and you've got an article on the funds that are out there from what happened with COVID-19 and the funds by town and the spending and how much each town gets.
Yes, we've done these piecemeal as the time goes by, but I thought it would be smart to pull them all together and so that the towns could see, as well as the residents could see, you know, how much money has been flowing down from Washington, and then how do the towns deal with it. And it's interesting that they deal with it, they vary town by town. Some towns are seem to have quite a few committees set up, and they're going through a very organized procedures. Others, North Canaan, which is the second largest amount received, has really not started to pull it together yet. But it's fascinating to see also not only how they administer the funds, but what they spend the money on. And so I think I encourage everyone to read this story to see. Some towns asked the residents to give them some ideas. Others didn't. It's interesting how a windfall, if you will, although it was a tough time under COVID, but nevertheless, there's a lot of money and there's more to come.
All right. Interesting story. Many, many years ago, the Salisbury Rotary Club, very involved in a campaign called Hope for Haiti, where they raised funds for medical needs, for milk, for rubber gloves, for a whole bunch of things. And that tradition is continuing with Louise Lindemeyer being involved. And you've got a great story about how they got this terrific grant once again for a clinic in Haiti. Louise and her husband, of course, have traveled around the world with their music. But this is really a great story. Once again, something starts locally and affects globally.
Yes, this is coming out of Salisbury, as you said. And it's the Hispaniola Health Partners is a charity that provides medical assistance and help along the Haitian-Dominican border. It received $51,000 from the AmeriCares, a Stanford-based support group, for primary care, maternal child health, and female cancer prevention. So it's a very positive story. It's going to expand the number of patients annually by 9,000. By 25%. So it's definitely a very nice piece of local charity getting money for Haiti.
One of the big events that's coming up in our region, now that we're back out and about and seeing our neighbors, Nova Horizons is bringing back their community picnic on July 12th, which will have great food, great music, once again with the Salisbury Band, and a chance once again for the residents at Noble and the residents of the surrounding towns to get together and recognize 50 years of Noble Horizons.
Yes, and if anybody missed the Salisbury Band on July 4th at the Grove, you can hear them here. They will be back, and I believe they played at Noble's first community picnic almost 50 years ago. So we're talking about some real history coming to life here again. This will be on Tuesday, July 12th. There's a rain date for the next day, the 13th. But it really started back in the 70s. And the Lakeville Hose Company supplied the barbecue chicken. So sounds like fun.
What's interesting about it is Lee Collins, the head of the band, now has a cottage, one of the cottages at Noble Horizons, as a matter of fact. And Lee's been with the band for all those 50 years and more. Another big event that's back, which is nice to see it, there's a couple of things actually going on in Falls Village this weekend. The giant tag sale, garage sale, and artisans market for the 9th and 10th. And then, of course, on the 10th, it is the car and motorcycle show.
Yes, and again, it's not only cars and motorcycles, but it's live music, food, you know, all kinds of vendors. And the proceeds benefit the Housatonic Valley FFA. That's the Falls Village Car and Motorcycle Show on July 10th. And again, the big tag sale. I have some visitors coming from out of town. I think we'll be going there.
It's a great event, and Falls Village has their new signs up and flags up. It's a quintessential New England town. Now, this is a story that shows the difference of this year's discussion and talking about affordable housing plan in Salisbury as the one that came up years ago. I think the group that has put forward this plan now, they've contacted Sally Spillane, who is going to be affected by this project. They've done a lot of pre-work, and they had their first info session with 50 people attending. I think they're being much more transparent and open and communicative this time around.
Well, of course, I was not here for the first go-around that was about 7 years ago, but you're correct that they've been reaching out to many people in the community, and this info session was well over an hour. Lots of questions, answers came. This is a proposed development on 5 acres near the village, about 250 yards from a walking distance along the extension of the rail trail, and only about 2 or so acres, I think 2.7 acres, will be used for the construction itself. That leaves the remainder to be kind of left in its natural state. So the other thing that is mentioned in this story is that the town needs to approve the right-of-way along the rail trail so that the Salisbury Housing Committee can take the next step, which is to come up with some design plans and more detail. They actually were puzzled by what they called themselves in a catch-22, because the committee really needs the approval to get access for it to go forward and make a design, and the community wants to know what it's going to look like, and so on and so forth. But anyway, there's another meeting coming up on Saturday, July 16th at 11 o'clock at the same location, the Salisbury Congregational Church, and then the town vote will happen on July 28th at 7:30, also at the church.
All right, you've got a story out of Millbrook, and it's something more and more people are doing. Of course, Salisbury Sharon Transfer Station is promoting this as well. How to get the right mix for the best composting?
Yes, I have to confess that I got a little bit lost in some of the detail about the key to successful composting is to maintain a certain ratio of carbon to nitrogen. And then again, the story was very practical in telling you, you know, look for green components like kitchen scraps, bread and grains. Brown components are likely to be like wood or pine needles and shredded newspaper. If you mix it up with one green component to every two brown components, you can end up with a pretty nice composting pile with lots of healthy microbes. This is a fun story to read from Matthew Creta, who sometimes covers the Carey Institute in Millbrook.
The weekend of July 4th, on July 2nd, the Eric Sloan Museum was open for people to come and visit and see exactly what's involved in the museum.
Well, this is a museum that is now, as you, I think, said, it's 50 years old now, and it has been brought to its current state by a tremendous amount of volunteer work, especially a handful of people. They brought back the cabin called the Noah Blake Cabin. And, you know, Eric Sloan was a 20th century artist and author who really avidly collected American tools and implements. And many of them are now on display, and they've been for a while. And it represents what really is Eric Sloan's really deep connection with tools and the connection between the tool and the human hand. Some people talk about how the pen or the pencil and in its hand as it writes is connecting to your brain. Well, Eric Sloan was very connected to the idea that a tool is a conduit to the person who used it, and so he was fascinated. And we, Leela Hawken, our correspondent who covers Kent and Sharon, did a nice story about a whole day of celebrations down there at the Eric Sloan Museum.
A couple of stories on A7. First of all, you got a nice story on cycling. I like the headline. Who is that cycling, sprinting, barefoot triathlete? And then a picture of Brian Ross below that. And the next story about that amazing cake auction, which raised thousands of dollars for the Sharon Historical Society.
Yes, both of these stories kind of show you a lot of human activity. Doug Landau, who went to school at Hotchkiss, who now lives in Virginia, but also has a place up here, he's a real champion athlete. He's currently the number one duathlon champion in the United States in his age group. He turned 64 on July 4th, but he's maintained connections with many of the people who've helped him over the years running, the Sharon Recreation Director, Matt Andrelios Mehta, Salisbury's Stacy Dodge, lots of people up here, including the crew coach at Hotchkiss, Victoria McGee. And it's a fun story because the man, he also runs barefoot. You might see him running around the roads here. The cake auction raised, I don't know yet, we don't know the exact number, but one cake went for $2,000. And it's all in a benefiting the Sharon Historical Society. And there's a large crowd. Lovely photo under a tent on what was a hot day, people looking at cakes, and Brian Ross, who happens to be on the board of the Lakeville Journal Foundation, was really a snappy auctioneer.
It's a great event. Let Them Eat Cake is what it's called. It's always a great event. We're going to go on to the editorial page now, Janet. Hopeful news.
Right. Every so often we need to take a step back and look at some things that are happening that really are culminations of hard work that give us hope for help in the community. And one was that the Hotchkiss Library of Sharon met its goal for its capital campaign, $3.5 million to benefit the library, which offers such universal services to everyone in the community. And at Salisbury Central School, SOAR director Linda Sloan is retiring after 5 years at the helm. And in honor of that, a mural was created with the help of the American Mural Project in Winsted and students at the school. And there was a ceremony centering on that. And it's dedicated to the late Zenas Block, who started SOAR and funded it and found a way to keep it going for years, and it's benefited so many students over the course of time. And anyone who knew Zenas would know that he'd be really smiling down on us to know that this is still going and he was able to start something that has affected so many people positively.
All right, and once again, a wide range of letters, everything about of course, the divide over abortion. You've got letters about primary care. I love the Robert's Court Raiders of Democracy. And even a little letter about daylilies.
That's right. Don't miss Fritz Mueller's letter, because last week I had a photograph of an orange flower that I referred to as a lily, and he's correcting me to say that's not a lily, that's a daylily, and there's a big difference. So he enlightens us as to what the difference is.
All right, and on the Viewpoint page, once again, you've got Peter Steiner, and you've got your guest commentary from John Nelson as well.
Right, which we're so glad to have. Reverend Nelson is the pastor at the Congregational Church of Salisbury United Church of Christ, and lets us know his feelings on Roe v. Wade and where we're going next, and really interesting. Lonnie Carter writing about pro-choice Catholics and Varujan Frangian writing about culture shock. They are all interrelated, and it's a time we all really need to think about these things.
All right, and we have about a minute and a half, 2 minutes left. Once again, because we've got a lot going on, once again, a very full compass.
That's right. We have outdoor concerts in Cornwall this summer, which give it a read and make plans to join them. It's fantastic to have these outdoor events happening again, as you said. Ed Furman writes about streaming for us, Two New Stars and Hidden Gems, and their Wild Rose and The Assistant. And Ed always really delves into these streaming shows and lets us know what to watch that will really give us inspiration. We have fantastical creatures coming alive in an ancient apple tree, which Madeline L'Engle writes these books, and give that a read. The Goshen Players are presenting a stage production of A Wrinkle in Time, and we tell you why you should see it.
Lots going on in the area, and once again, you can keep abreast of it all in the journal, and especially in that section. All right, guys, thanks for joining us again this morning. We'll run over just a portion of what you'll find in the Lakeville Journal and Millerton News again next Thursday. Have a great week, guys.
You too.
Thank you.
This week in the Lakeville Journal, you can find all that information on the web, tricornernews.com, and, of course, in the paper as well.